This is the Poetry Magazine podcast for August 2008. I'm Christian Wyman, editor of Poetry Magazine.
And I'm Don Scher, senior editor of the magazine. Each month on the Poetry Magazine podcast, we feature a few poems and articles in the upcoming issue.
But this month, we're breaking format to bring you a drama by Yehuda Amichai. It's called Killing Him, a radio play, and it appears in its entirety in the summer break July-August issue of the magazine.
The late Yehuda Amichai is considered by many to be the greatest modern Israeli poet. He was one of the first to write in colloquial Hebrew. He also wrote radio plays in verse, which were performed on Israeli radio.
This version was translated from the Hebrew by Hadar Makav Hassan and Adam Selig, who also directed the performance you're about to hear.
Adam Selig is a poet, playwright, and stage director who lives in Toronto, where he's the artistic director of One Little Goat Theater.
Let us set the stage with his play, so to speak, just a little bit. It's about a poet who has been silent for years and years, about a doctoral candidate in literature, Joe, who has based his entire thesis on this poet's silence, and Rachel, his fiancée.
And as the translators say in the introduction, nobody is spared in the send-up of Pobiz, the small world of Pobiz, not the critic, not the academic, not even the dutiful fiancée in the play.
Right. Rachel is played by Kelly Bruhaney, Joe by Tom Galassi, and the poet-slash-critic is played by Lawrence Grimm.
Here's the first scene. To download the whole play, go to our website, poetrymagazine.org.
Again, like a rebellious nation, my heart stands and cries, forward to the battle! To the battle? Now? What's a battle to an old man like me? Oh, barricades of washed-up words, stanzas filling books with my heart's murmurs, my love is lined with lies and sweetened with the sweetest white sugar. My thoughts are rusty, my feelings but smoky furniture and scraps of youthful rage gone by. All this piled on the barricades, but whither, my flag, my withering flag? Spring is in my heart again, and winter in my eyes, fall in my arms,
and
frost
in
my
toes. Oh, desire, oh, vain rebellion, what more? This is the end. This is the end. This is the end. This is the end.
Joe! Joe, what's with you?
This is the end. The end, the end, the end, the end.
What's wrong with you? The end of what? What happened? Good God, I've never...
This is the end. Read the newspaper.
Which newspaper? Where?
There, that ball of paper. Well, read it.
One moment. Hold on. This is a serious act of archaeological reconstruction.
Come on, read it out loud.
And frost in my toes.
Oh, desire, oh, vain rebellion, what more do I ask? Oh, dark desperation, in a tenebrous valley like a ship of ghosts. But behold, what is that light on the horizon? Yonder, as if from a distant cave. My legs fail me, yet my heart soaks up hope like a big sponge in the bathtub.
A big sponge in the bathtub?
Go on, go on.
Fine. Fine, stop rushing me. One moment. It's hard to make out. Okay. Three maidens sit in that cave, weaving my fate.
Spin on the spindle. No, not on the spindle. They crouch over books by lamplight. The students, how studious. Till dawn breaks, they study and maybe read my poems of yore.
Go on.
Slowly I'll
sneak through the rustling summer grass and watch, struck with awe. There is a window, ancient, arched, and there she sits with her hands stroking the hair of her head. Oh, my studious one, I beg to see you, only to see, not to touch, not to sit in your room, only to know your name, to call your name. Oh, your name, and your name, and your name. I'll peep stealthily.
Enough! I can't read anymore.
Do you know what this means?
I know.
The end of my glorious dissertation. The end of the literature department's rising star. I'll remain a teaching assistant forever.
I won't let you. I love you.
So what? I'll sit and start writing on a new subject. Come to me in 4 years when I'm done.
You're out of your mind.
Only to discover, like Sisyphus, that it was all for naught. What an idiot. And just yesterday I wrote the final chapter. Here, look, the dissertation that will revolutionize the appreciation of D.G. Castleman's poetry.
And I drew the letters on the cover. D.G. Castleman's poetry and its interpretation.
The long silence of D.G. Castleman. That bastard, that stupid old man!
But Joe, you admire him more than anyone.
That stupid old man had to open his mouth again like Balaam's talking ass. here, the concluding lines of my thesis. Rare are the cases in which an eminent poet stops writing at the height of his success. Like his biblical forebearer, Ezekiel, he went silent at the age of 40. What monastic discipline, what intellectual honesty, what peace with reality. A king who renounces his kingdom at the pinnacle of power, when the nation's love is with him. D.G. Castleman, the king of poetry, the king of poetry, and the king of silence. What are you laughing at?
You laughed.
It's not funny at all. 4 years of work down the drain. My professor warned me when I took on this research. Who would have thought that after 23 years of silence, he'd start spewing his verse again? Yes, exactly, 23 years. You're not listening. Put down that idiotic poem!
Let me keep reading.
I shall peep, 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 and be struck.
Joe! Joe, it's the stalker. Remember I told you about the stalker who sneaks up to our window from the yard? Once we ambushed him, but he managed to escape. The police told us that stalkers typically hang around student apartments. Here, listen to this.
I will see the three caves. I will see the three maidens. I will see the three fairies who see into my future and my primordial past. Quiet. I will not move. Here come the three.
That's me, and Heather, and Lisa.
Oh, storm of pink thighs that shan't storm over me. My ears hear a door close, and footsteps. Perhaps a groom steps into the summer night. He walks out satisfied. Perhaps he whistles a tune. Quickly, I will hide my wretched self, starved as I am, so as not to see the light in his eyes.
That was you, and that's the stalker. It's the stalker.
My eye hurts. A hard stone has scratched my forehead.
It's him. He tried to climb. Listen to this.
Like a vine, I will climb the wall of your home. Pour out thy wrath upon me. Pour, pour.
Don't you remember that one night Lisa poured a bucket of water onto the stalker from the window?
Only the throbbing of my heart remains, and my neck catches on the clothesline, where the small, gentle, wonderful things hang to dry.
We should hang him out to dry.
Oh, wondrous dripping cave.
Dripping cave?
The sound of warm running waters filling a white tub of foaming bubble bath spills happiness into the heart of the sorrowful listener. Languidly stretching her body, she slowly, indulgently prepares to anoint herself in oils. And now, like a snake, she sheds a final layer of skin, her clinging panties, a triangular lace fig leaf with three holes. Home. Go home, oh poor old man. Your head is spinning in the white steam of the bathtub in the clouds.
Go home! Go home! Go home,
oh dirty old man! And as if that weren't enough, wait, just wait. Now that fat pseudo-critic will have to open his mouth. You'll see. Soon you'll see his articles. That abominable bastard. That sycophantic parasite.
Enough. Enough.
Here is what our famed critic will write.
Who would have thought, who would have hoped that once again Castleman, our poet, would break the space of his silence? Yes, he did it again. The man of our motherland's fire ignites his own torch. The man of the people's revival has revived from the grave of his silence, his poetry again blazing trails through the spiritual landscape of our country. The sacred and the erotic have met. The light of a love renewed illuminates the world of values, and in embracing that world he returns to us. Is there an allegory more wonderful than this? Thus, with the eyes of this renewed vision, our poets shall watch over our lackluster lives.
Watch over, watch over! I'm telling you, he's just peeping!
Here, D.G. Castleman, the man, the artist, scores. He penetrates our consciousness, breaks away into our zone, and he's in! He's in! The addition of a late love experience contributes to the momentum of this penetrating goal.
I'm going out of my mind.
These last poems are emblematic of our soul-searching era. A time of crisis has arrived. With great struggles has our poet struggled, and he has prevailed.
Joe. Joe! Do you still love me?
With a secretive smile masking the lines, his eyes emerge to strip veil after veil from our lives, until we stand awestruck, trembling from the powerful experience.
Joe, look at me. Look at me.
These poems are devoid of the nihilism and iconoclasm toward enshrined national values that characterize the poets of our time. There is a return to origins and an originality of return. A return of return, if you will. Thus he soars like an eagle above the trends of today, with the ethos of the past lighting his way.
Joe, don't pay attention. I love you.
Through the tension of opposition and a burning, yearning heart, he embraces this land with all her stones and thorns.
Embraces, embraces.
That's when he fell, when he tried to climb the wall. Lisa told me that she heard a thump and some rustling, and Heather said she even heard someone sighing.
These poems occasionally heave sighs of profound pain. Sacred quiver and profane quiver meet in the quivering quill of his vibrating body, with I and they illuminating the way by contradistinction. I am one big clock, a swelling tick, a hickory dickory time bomb. Oh, footsteps on the stairs. The poet speaks of stairs, and I will discuss the significance of stairs in the poetry of D.G. Castleman. They possess a powerful, sacred symbol signifying the stairs in his poetry.
Oh my God!
I shall not be caught like a ram in the thicket of my flesh. The blood of grapes will splatter on my mountain's rise, and the womb shall be my mountain's lust. Oh, caves of lust, to touch your knee, to see your thighs like a man watching clouds gather in the firmament, to see the muscles contract and release like a game without end. In the fullness of your thighs, I shall write my love poems all over your skin.
Actually, it's nice to write on skin.
The old goat.
Here the poet achieves the essence of his expression. He seeks to carve the message of his life, the vision of his days, and the prophecy of his nights deeply into being.
This is so painful. Joe.
What? What is it?
I have a great idea. A wonderful plan. Read this.
If she would only come from her secret place, I would shut my mouth forever. If I could only see her face, she would save me from these words. Come, my bride, stop my lips with your hand. Dress the wound of my poetry. Come, come, save me from this gushing flow.
You still don't get it?
No, not at all.
I'll appear before him. I'll save him. Here it says,
only then will my life's verse be stilled. Only then will I rest in silence, like a house burnt to ruins. burnt by my late love, which wants nothing but to see you within my walls.
Absolutely not!
But it will put an end to his poetry. Nothing will happen.
Read this.
My lust, collected and pooled over thousands of years, will finally pour forth to irrigate your beauty.
You see?
It's nothing. It's symbolic of cultivating the land. Listen to this.
Thus will I stand across from you and look, watch. For me, that is enough, as if facing a sacred place whose threshold I dare not cross.
What about this?
My storm will storm over your storming virginity in the quivering white zone of your thighs.
Is that symbolic, too?
Of course it's symbolic. The white zone is a symbol of his simple, lonesome life. The storm is the storm of the nation.
An entire nation in her thighs?
Listen to this.
Words, words, but for words I have nothing to give you. I am an old man. Take my words.
Listen to this.
I will buck like a billy goat.
What about this?
I will lie alone and hum your name. No more.
He clearly says no more.
Yeah, but then there's this.
And with a battle cry in my veins, I will tear your clothes.
What's that? That's symbolic?
Yes, listen.
Give an old man like me. Give him rest.
How about this?
Your bottom is my end. Your bosom's my Beelzebub's.
And this?
Stand in the doorway, forbear, approaching me.
What about this?
As a woman presses grapes into wine, so will you press your dress, and the blood of grapes will splatter my lust.
Enough, Joe. We should at least try. 4 years of work, remember? Is he married?
Widowed by the first, divorced by the second. Why?
Trust me? Besides, he's old and I know some judo. I'll appear in a dark skirt and a simple white blouse, innocent as a schoolgirl singing in the choir. Proper, virginal, parochial. Here, listen.
Frightened, she approached like a flower.
Etc., etc. That's how I'll be.
There are also lustful irises and pussy willows.
No, I'll be a primrose under a rock, an innocent daisy.
A flow of purity.
A flow of purity.
That was scene one from Killing Him, a radio play, by Yehuda Amichai. The play was translated from the Hebrew by Hadar Markov Hassan and Adam Selig, and was produced with kind permission of Hannah Amichai. The actors were Kelly Brahaney as Rachel, Tom Galassi as Joe, and Lawrence Grimm as the poet and critic. The performance was directed by Adam Selig. The music was composed by Richard Windier, audio production and sound effects by Ed Herman. The executive producer and casting director was Valerie Johnson.
Let us know what you thought of the play and our production of it. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org.
You can download the entire play from our website, poetrymagazine.org.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is produced by Curtis Fox and Ed Herman. I'm Don Scher.
And I'm Christian Wyman. Thanks for listening.